This is Word Radio.
Hi, this is Matt Jolly. Aviate timepieces honor both the aircraft and the untold story of the airman. Check out the awesome lineup of Aviate timepieces by visiting avi-8.co.uk. That's avi-8.co.uk. Choose from six popular themes, including the Harrier. They're all there waiting for you at avi-8.co.uk.
You're strapped in to Woodbridge Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Well, good evening, everybody. Matt Jolly here with you, fresh back from the Rhode Island Air Show. Great time out there with all of our friends and family. Got to see quite a few of you to stop by. It's always a fun show. You know, when you do an air show, especially at Rhode Island, you just have to sort of pinch yourself because of the talent level that shows up for this show. It really is one of the finest shows anywhere in the country. What an honor to get to go back there year after year and have fun with everybody from Rhode Island. The 143rd Airlift Wing out there puts on a wonderful, wonderful event. If you're ever along the New England area May or June, put that on your list and stop by there and take it in, because it is a world-class event. What a great time. So my thanks to them for having us out there this past weekend. A little under the weather today, so bear with me. As we recover from whatever is from whatever was in the air out there in Rhode Island. My guest tonight, he's not under the weather. He's feeling really well, I think. And I'm talking about Steve Snyder, who is an author of a very interesting book. It's an Amazon bestseller right now called Shot Down. It is his father's story from World War II. He's here to tell us all about it. Steve, good evening. Thanks for being here.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Now, you actually got into this as an interest, I guess, regarding your father's wartime experience. Did he talk about this as you were a kid, any at all, that sort of piqued your interest in this, or was this sort of a late-blooming fascination with his wartime service?
Well, I knew the basics growing up about his war experiences, and then I went on a trip to Belgium with my parents. And he took me around to where a lot of the events occurred in Belgium, southern Belgium, just north of the French border. That's when it became personal for me. And so I did have an interest, but it wasn't until I retired in 2009 that I really had the time to delve into it in great detail.
I see. So this sort of grew steadily, and you just sort of came into it. Did you have an interest in aviation? Was that ever something that sort of carried through, or was this just I guess really as we like to say, they're all props. The airplanes are all props in a big stage play. But was that how this came to be, or was there a thread that went all the way through your lifetime with this?
Well, it was more of an interest in World War II, the history of World War II and the air war over Europe, than it was in aviation. Although, you know, growing up, my dad and I made a model B-17 and all sorts of different fighters. And so, you know, I loved the B-17 since I was a little kid.
You know, I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've always said that model aviation is the gateway into larger things with aviation. And history, for some folks, is the hook. And we're always encouraging people, whether they like the vintage military airplanes or not, to explore their own family's history. So here's a success story. You do that. You know your dad flew over there. You uncover all of this, and now we have this wonderful body of work called Shot Down, which is an Amazon bestseller. Tell us about the book. Give us sort of the 50,000 foot overview, if you will.
Okay. Well, it takes it's set in the framework of World War II. And it's about the dramatic experiences of each member, really, of a 10-man. My dad's 10-man crew. He was the pilot, and his plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. So although my dad might be the central character, really it's about what happened to each member of the crew. Something different happened to each guy. Five of them made it back. Five of them did not. And it's also about all the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help the crew.
And your dad is quite the hero, because he actually he evaded capture, you were saying, and then later went to fight with the French resistance, which is just incredible.
Yeah, he has quite a story. As you mentioned, after he bailed out, he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture. He was hidden by Belgians for a while, and usually when the underground picked up a down flyer, they tried to get him back to England, down through France, over the Pyrenees into Spain, and then out through British-controlled Gibraltar. But something always went wrong trying to get my dad out. Some of the escape routes had been compromised by collaborators. So he just got tired of hiding, so he decided to join the French resistance, and he started fighting against the Germans and sabotaging convoys. And then finally, when Patton's Third Army came up through France after D-Day, he met up with them and then got back to England.
We have a saying around the studio that says, when an old man dies, a library burns. And I'm sure your dad was rich with wisdom and with mentoring and all of these wonderful things that fathers do naturally, it seems like. But after becoming a father, you learn that, well, it's not so much natural as it is just a happy accident, I guess, a lot of times. But what was your dad like? What do you take away when you read this book about your father and
his
character?
He was quite a guy. We were close. He was a great dad, and he coached my little league team and was a great supporter. He was kind of a larger than life type guy. I have two older sisters. I mentioned Susan, who his plane was named after. My other sister was actually born while he was missing in action, so that was really tough on my mother. But we always looked at my dad as compared him to John Wayne, or if you remember the show Gunsmoke, James Arness. He was kind of a no nonsense, rugged type of guy. But he had a soft spot in his heart as well. So, we were close, and he was a great man.
Well, the story Shot Down, which is your book, chronicles the experience of the crew of Susan Ruth, not just your father. And one unique aspect of this book is that the German pilot who actually shot them down has now become a friend of yours. Can you tell us about this relationship, which I think is just fascinating?
Yeah, because my dad, you know, when he was telling me the story, you know, he just knew that his B-17 was attacked by two German Focke-Wulf 190 fighters, and that's all he knew. But when I was doing my research, one day my wife asked me, well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane, which I thought was a harebrained idea. How on earth am I ever going to do that? But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do, and I went on the internet and I joined a couple forums about the Luftwaffe, and I posted an inquiry because I knew the place where this plane was shot down, the time of day, the date. And in a week, two guys got back to me, one from England and one from Belgium. And on that day, there were there were 10 B-17s shot down. And the one shot down south of Chimay, Belgium, was shot down by Hans Berger. They actually shot him down too. The gunners on my dad's plane shot him down at the same time, and he was able to bail out and made it through the war. And fortunately for me, became a translator after the war, so he speaks English. So I really lucked out. And then I contacted him, and we talked over the phone and interviewed him through email. And he gave me some wonderful insight that about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force, which is in the book. And then I had the good fortune last May to travel to Europe and went to Munich and filmed an interview with him. And I was, met him, face to face. And now we have become friends. So he's kind of amazed that he's friends with the American pilot who he shot down.
Well, I wanted to get into that, because what was that first phone call like? I mean, he could have very easily had just hung up, which would make sense, and it would be understandable, but he didn't. Tell us about that call.
Yeah, His name is Hans Berger, and he's 93 years old now, and he stays in real good shape. But one of the guys, the guy in Belgium, was actually a historian and a Luftwaffe historian, and had written a number of books. So he actually contacted Hans initially and asked Hans if he would be willing to talk to me. And he said he was, and I was so excited. I was just beside myself to think that I'm going to talk to the German pilot that shot down my dad's plane. And, you know, at first he was a little leery. And I remember on one occasion he asked me, you know, gosh, Steve, you're asking me a lot of personal questions, and I really don't even know you. But over time, I built up his trust, and he just gave me some terrific information. After he bailed out, he was picked up. He was actually shot down 3 times during the war, and most all his buddies were all killed during the war. So he was very fortunate that he made it. And seeing him in person was just a great thrill. We had lunch together first, had some Wiener Schnitzel and a Augustiner beer, and then went back to his apartment to film the interview. And he brought out his flight jacket with his Iron Cross. He even brought out his logbook and showed me his entry from February 8th of 1944, where he wrote down that he shot down a B-17 and his plane was shot down and he had to bail out. So that was pretty exciting.
And what about him? I mean, tell us a little bit about the mentoring that you've learned from him, because to me, if all you focus on is the shoot 'em up stuff, then we lose the real gold there. What have you learned about Hans? What stands out about him?
Well, he was just a 19-20 year old guy, and in essence, he was pretty much just like the American flyers, you know, just a really young guy fighting for his country, just trying to stay alive. And going up against the 8th Air Force, I mean, he was outnumbered by a large margin, not only with all the bombers he was going up against, but all the American fighter planes, the P-51 Mustangs and Thunderbolts and P-38 Lightnings. And then after the war, he narrowly escaped being sent to a prison camp. His family was from Dresden, which was in East Germany. And after the war, he had to go back to East Germany. And one day, a doctor friend of his warned him that the Russians were going to pick him up that night and send him to Siberia. So, you know, he risked his life to sneak across the border and from East Berlin or East Germany into West Germany. And he escaped that. So he not only had a story, you know, during the war, but also after the war.
Right. And you think of the firebombings that occurred there in Dresden.
Oh,
just how horrific
they were. Just horrific.
Yeah, absolutely. You're the president of the 306 Bomb Group, the Historical Association. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you come into this position? Was it just through history or and your love of history trying to research this that led you to this organization?
That's a good question. It was formed initially by Russell Strong, who was a navigator in the 306 Bomb Group, and he became the historian after the war. And my dad had gone to a few 306 Bomb Group reunions, but I didn't really think too much of it. And then I believe it was 2011 where they held a reunion down in San Diego, and I was retired at that time, and I got an email to inform me about it. I thought, well, you know, it's right in my backyard in Southern California. I'm retired. I have the time. I really have no excuse not to go. So my oldest son and I went down and went to the reunion, and I just got hooked. A couple of years later, they asked me to be a board member, and then I became vice president, and now I'm president of the organization. We hold annual reunions every year. This year, it's going to be in early October in Indianapolis.
And how many of these guys are left now? How many of the original members are left? Or are there any left?
Oh, yeah. We probably get about a dozen vets.
That's terrific.
To our reunions, but you know, that keeps dwindling. As you know, all these guys are in their 90s, well in their 90s today. At the end of the war, there were 16 million World War II veterans, and 97% of those great men are no longer with us. So it's an honor to hear their stories and listen to what they have to say. You know, basically the goal of our organization is to remember, to honor, and to educate, to remember what happened in the air war over Europe and the 306 bomb group, to honor the men who served and fought in the 306 bomb group, and then to educate the public about what happened. That's our goal, and that's my goal, really, when I do a lot of speaking and go to air shows signing copies of my book.
Well, and the book, Shot Down, it really serves as not only a family history, but also the story of this entire crew. Something that stood out to me, the image that we shared on our site today, I'm assuming, is of the Susan Ruth with that happy crew that's standing out in front.
Oh, actually, that's not the Susan Ruth.
Well, then I feel better. Because I was going to ask you how your sister felt about that. I mean, she, you know, here's this this lady emblazoned on the side of it, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd. Maybe one of the crew members just painted his girlfriend on it, you know, and the name stuck or something. But
yeah, that was just a B-17 that they took their crew picture in front of, and my dad was actually a little bit embarrassed by it. He was my dad was a real strong Christian, and he thought, you know, that was pretty racy.
Well, yeah,
but and it's interesting to note that the Air Force was the only entity that allowed their planes to be painted. The Marines didn't, the Navy didn't, nor did any other country. But the 8th Air Force thought it would help these guys, young guys' morales, if they could name and paint their planes. And they were very creative in what they painted and named their planes. And most of the time, it was a nude or scantily clad woman.
What has surprised you the most about this process? Now that you've become an author. That you're working, and we'll get into this in a minute on a documentary about this process. But what has surprised you personally the most about all of this?
Well, it had to be finding Hans Berger. Another thing that was gratifying is I went on a quest to try to find relatives of all the members of the crew, and I was successful in doing so. All except one of the navigator, Robert Benninger. I couldn't find any relatives of his, but it was really exciting every time I'd find a relative, because most guys didn't talk too much about their World War II experiences, and many of the relatives knew very little, if anything, about the history of their vet, whether it's their dad or an uncle or a cousin or, you know, a grandfather. And so that, yeah, I was able to, you know, give them a lot of information about what happened with their vets and his experiences during the war. So that, and we've kind of become a family. Our last, I've been to Belgium 4 times.
Wow.
And for the 70th anniversary of the liberation of my dad's plane being shot down, I got about 25 of the relatives to go over there for it. So that was a lot of fun.
So have you had a chance yet to fly over?
Memorial and I'm sorry.
No, have you had a chance to fly over there yet on a B-17 or here by chance?
No, not over there. I've gone up on a B-17 a couple times, and that's a thrill of a lifetime. It's definitely a bucket list type thing, just to get a tiny taste of what it must have been like to go up in there. It just gives you chills.
Yeah. Well, and I've always said it's the best airplane to fly on because as an airplane, it's a very enjoyable experience. But when you stop and you think about what these guys like your father were going through at the time, I mean, it really was hell on earth, or hell in the sky at least. Unimaginable.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's freezing, minus 40 to 60 degrees below zero, and you have to go up against enemy fighters, and then the anti-aircraft fire the flak. And even though it was so cold, my dad said when they'd be on that bomb run, he'd just be dripping sweat and with the adrenaline running through him. They were amazing guys. It just to keep going back and to face that day after day.
So how has this experience, how has it shaped you as a man? I mean, obviously you get inside the head of not only your father, in a different way than you probably knew him as a child, as an adult, but also all these other people that he interacted with. How has this changed you, Stephen? I'm just curious.
Well, it's totally changed my life. After a 40-year career in sales and sales management, I retired and, you know, I was just sleeping in late and reading books and taking it easy. And all of a sudden, I finally decided to write a book. And now, basically, I have a full-time job. I spend pretty much all day, every day, promoting my book. And as I mentioned, you know, on social media, and I mentioned earlier, I do a lot of speaking and making PowerPoint presentations and then going around to air shows around the country, signing copies of the book. So it's really taken on a life of its own. I get to meet a lot of World War II veterans, and at all these different events, I meet so many wonderful people. It's really a lot of fun. It's a thrill. It's surreal sometimes when I look at that book and think I wrote it. But it's like I say, it really has changed my life. It's just a real blessing.
I think it's terrific. And of course, we're always encouraging people, as I said earlier, to study their own history, because there's always some surprise that comes around the corner. And you go, I had no idea. I just had no idea they went through that. Did that happen to you? Probably several times in this process.
Oh, yes. And I probably wouldn't have written a book if it wasn't for two Belgium gentlemen who were young boys during the war and were greatly affected by it. And they became local historians later in life. And they interviewed many Belgian people and members of the underground and documented their testimony about events that took place involving my dad and his crew. And they gave me some unbelievably detailed information that's in the book about events and experiences that various members of the crew had that, you know, many of them, it would have been lost forever without their research and documentation. So I owe them a great debt for all that they gave me. And they provided me with so many pictures that were taken during World War II. My dad's helper sent him a lot of pictures, and there's over 200 time period photographs in the book, so you can visualize everything you're reading about. There's even one picture over there with my dad fighting with the French resistance, jumping out of a Jeep, which is pretty special for me.
Wow. Unbelievable that you have all of that. I mean, really and truly unbelievable that you have it.
Oh, yeah. I'm so fortunate. Most people, all those information has just been lost over the years, and they know very little. That's another gratifying thing whenever I can help somebody out to find information about their vet so they can know a little bit more about what happened.
So tell us what your dad did after the war. Tell us what he went on to go and do.
Well, he was he came back and was a flight instructor for a while, and then he's in the Air Force Reserves for a little while, and then he did quite a few different things. He owned a restaurant, and he was the chef at his restaurant in Pasadena, California. And then he got into different lines of work and doing this and doing that. And then he finally, his main occupation, if you recall the old redemption stamps, like S&H green stamps. They were different types of stamps all around the country that you'd save and put in a booklet and redeem it for merchandise. Well, he sold and manufactured a machine, like a stamp machine, that dispensed those stamps. So he sold those to gas stations and grocery store chains around the country. And that's where he retired from.
Became a salesman, just like you.
Right. Right. Yeah, I followed in his footsteps.
So now all that's left is for you to become a pilot, I guess, if you're not already.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad didn't fly any after the war, you know, I guess because he was shot down and then he had to crash land a B-17 when he was a flight instructor at Lockbourne Air Force Base in Ohio. And I think he probably thought, well, I'm kind of pushing my luck here.
Kind of finished. How many missions did he fly? Someone had written in and was asking about that.
He was actually shot down on his eighth mission. Some of his crew had more missions than he did because he played center on the basketball team. Back then, he was considered tall. He was 6'3", and he tore the ligaments in his ankles playing for the for the team, and he couldn't fly for 2 months. So some of his crew had more missions than he did.
What a remarkable story, though, and like so many others that you hear, just a guy that wanted to do his part. Tell us about the documentary that you're trying to make, because this is sort of the continuation of this project.
Yeah, as I mentioned, it was just a year ago, May, that my youngest son and I, and then a buddy of mine who's a motion picture cameraman here in Hollywood, we went over to Belgium and spent 3 days filming all the locations that are described in the book. And then we went on to Munich, Germany to interview Hans Berger. And so we ended up with about 16 hours of raw footage, which we need to condense down. So I just, we're working with a guy to do that and try to come up with about a 45 minute documentary. It'll be kind of a combination of the story of, from the book of my dad and his crew, but also somewhat, how I came to write the book. So we'll see how that goes. And, hopefully it'll turn out, pretty good, but I don't know how long it's going to take. There's so much footage to go through. I'd be pleased if it's out by the end of the year, but I have a feeling it won't be.
Right. Well, it's like anything else. It always takes longer, it seems. But I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Steve. I really appreciate it. And tell everybody how they can get a copy of the book, because it's worth having on the shelf.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you having me on the show, Matt. It's terrific, and I've had a lot of fun talking with you. But they can really pick up the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever books are sold. If they don't carry it, they can order it from their distributor. And it has won over 20 National Book Awards, too, in the 3 years since it's been out. So I'm happy about that. And then my website is stevesnyderauthor.com. And if somebody wants a signed autographed book, they can obtain one on my website.
Well, we've made it very easy for them to do that. They just click on the quick link in the show story tonight. So try to make that easy. Steve Snyder, thanks for coming on the show. Great to hear your voice.
Well, thanks so much. It was delightful.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, Steve. Thanks again.
Okay.
All right, folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes with Stephen Bridgewater. It's the Night of Steves tonight. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Matt Jolly. AV-8 timepieces honor both the aircraft and the untold story of the airman. Check out the awesome lineup of AV-8 timepieces by visiting avi-8.co.uk. That's avi-8.co.uk. Choose from 6 popular themes, including the Harrier. They're all there waiting for you at avi-8.co.uk.
You're strapped in to Wolfbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
My thanks to Steve Snyder for coming on tonight. It's the Night of Steve. Steve Bridgewater joining us now from his home very late after the trivia games were played. I presume you did okay, Steve. You were the quiz master tonight, weren't you?
I was reading the questions. Yeah, I was reading the questions, Matt.
So, of course, you did well.
I got 100% tonight.
Oh, well, wonderful. Steve Snyder does such a nice job. I'm glad to have him on the show finally. All right, so I'm under the weather. I'm going to let you talk. Tell us what's going on over across the pond, Steve. A lot of new stuff taking flight here this spring, isn't it? So tell us what's going on. Good stuff.
It is. Started the air show season over here. We had our first show 2-3 weeks ago, which was good. We had normally the first show of the year over here is Abingdon, which is an old Royal Air Force station down in Oxfordshire. They put their show back a couple of weeks to try and get better weather. And as you probably expect, the weather wasn't great, but they still had a good show, good mix of aeroplanes. But the first really big show for me was Old Warden, Shuttleworth Collection, which I know somewhere it's very close to your heart, Matt.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Full of de Havilland aeroplanes.
Oh,
and,
I know.
We were blessed with wonderful weather. It was a good family day out for all of us. And I think I'm going to spend quite a lot of time at Old Warden this year. They've got a really good lineup of shows scheduled with some really interesting aeroplanes. We've got a show in 2 weeks' time, which is themed around Fly Navy. And obviously, there's lots of stuff based at the Shuttleworth Collection, you know, that sort of 20s, 30s era of really interesting aeroplanes. And of course, going back to the First World War and even further back than that. But for the Fly Navy show, they're bringing in some interesting aeroplanes from further afield. So we've got, for example, the Sea Fury coming in from the North Weald Heritage guys. Old Warden's a very small venue. It's a little grass airfield. For those who haven't been there, it's a tiny little airfield in it. So you're really close to the action. And it's got what's called what we refer to as the bent flight line. So if you imagine you've got two runways at 90 degrees to each other, the aircraft come around that corner. So you get wonderful top views of everything that displays. And I'm really looking forward to seeing a Sea Fury going around that bend at Old Warden. That's going to be something really special. I think it's going to be Richard Grace flying the aeroplane as well. So young Richard really handles that Sea Fury really well. So yes, Shuttleworth is shaping up into the venue of the year, really.
I love it. And that's where Carol is at, is it? I guess Carol DeSole is down there. DeSole,
that's right. Yes. There. Yeah. That's where her chipmunk's based. So we normally see Carol down there at the show. The other really big heavy metal they've got coming in for the Navy show, Matt, is they've got the Sea Vixen coming in, the fastest privately owned aeroplane in the UK. We're not permitted in the UK to have supersonic aeroplanes on the civil register, but the Sea Vixen's just about as close as you're going to get. Civilian registered, but now operated by the Royal Navy down at Naval Air Station Yeovilton. So that's going to be interesting. And Stephen Gray's fighter collection supporting the show en masse as well with Wildcat, Bearcat and Corsair. So again, big aeroplanes at a small venue. That's going to be really impressive.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun down there for sure. And then what are you working on these days?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, you know, I keep busy. Yeah, I've got plenty of stuff ticking away in the background. I've actually just finished, we refer them as bookazines. So it's sort of a cross between a magazine and a book. Imagine like a big hefty magazine with a big square binding on it called Valor in the Air, which is about British pilot, Commonwealth pilots who won the Victoria Cross for gallantry in the air. And there are about just over 50 pilots who've won the VC dating back to about 1916. So there's about 20 or 30 during the First World War, and then the bulk again in the Second World War. So we've got everything in there from SE-5As and Newports through to Corsairs and Hanley Page Hamptons and Vickers Wellington. Some really great stories of amazing bravery. I'll just share one with you, man. There's a guy called Bill,
please do.
James Ward, who was flying a Wellington. Well, he was actually a radio operator on a Wellington. And the aircraft got hit, caught fire. And as your listeners will, I'm sure, know, the Wellington was a fabric-covered aeroplane, so it caught fire pretty quick. James actually went out through the porthole onto the wing with a fire hose wrapped around his waist, walked out across the wing with a fire extinguisher tucked down his flying jacket, and put the engine out, put the flames out on the engine. So just remarkable stories of gallantry.
And that's just one of...
One of 50-plus stories. As you know, Matt, I've been writing for a living about aeroplanes for best part of 20 years now. I think this is probably one of the things I've been most proudest about writing. And also, just whenever I've written these things, you get shivers down the spine at the level of just going beyond brave. It's just incredible gallantry. And you can see why these guys won the Victoria Cross, which is the highest level of achievement that our military aircrew can receive. Interesting, not been awarded to aircrew since 1945. It was a Corsair pilot, Canadian Corsair pilot, who was the last recipient of a VC, and that was back in 1945. So that's what I've been doing.
Well,
in amongst
it.
Doing various bits and pieces on magazines and lots of bookazine projects in the background.
You seem to write more books than anyone I know. Seriously. You do. I don't know how you do it.
Something has to keep me out of the pub, doesn't it, Matt?
Well, not much does. From what I remember, I mean, come on now.
This is very true. This is very true.
It's what I love about you.
But you think the good thing now, we've got the start of the air show season. It means
That's
I've got
right.
a distraction, so it's, it keeps me away from the bar.
So, you know, I was thinking about you the other day, and I thought, Stephen needs to come over for the Miramar show. Just someday.
That's one I've never done.
I know.
When I was in the States about 6 or 7 years ago, I hired a PA-28 out of Gillespie Field, and we managed to fly over Miramar.
I think you should come this year. I really, yeah. This year, I think you should come.
I think that sounds a good plan.
I have a little bit of time.
Of course, we need to get you across this side of the pond as well.
Well, don't worry. I'll be there.
Well, we need to get you some good show. We've got Duxford in 2 weeks. We haven't. We've got Duxford this weekend, actually.
This weekend,
the first big Duxford show of the year.
I plan on spending a lot of time at Dale Abbey myself. I really do. you know the story, and I've yet to tell the listeners about our big, big news. But soon, I will be able to tell them. I'm just waiting on some clearances about how we're going to release this big, big story that will take us all via a grand adventure, I should say. But it's coming. It's coming very soon. So.
And we can't wait. It's going to be a big, exciting time.
It will be fun. It will be fun. The undisclosed location, which is probably all we'll be able to say, is going to be remarkable. Really and truly. It's going to be huge, Steve. Huge. Bigly huge.
We're going to take over the world, Matt.
That's right. Bigly huge, or whatever he said. All right. It's going to be fun, though. It will be fun. So tell us about your summer plans, because you always do these grand adventures. Aside from coming over and going to Miramar with us this year, what else are you planning on doing?
It's going to be mostly UK-based this year. We're off to, having said that, we're off to Paris in June. I've been shortlisted again for the International Aerospace Journalist of the Year Awards. So we're going to the awards dinner in French France. So that'll be interesting. Taking the good doctor out there with me for a couple of days in Paris. That's about as far as we're going to get this summer. But the plan for the winter is to go and spend a couple of weeks down under in Australia. A good friend of ours is getting married to an Australian girl. We've got the UK leg of the wedding in about 3 weeks' time. And then they're having an Australian leg of the wedding sometime between Christmas and New Year, we think, at the moment. So, a lot of traveling this summer.
I love it. What is the bucket list for you, Steve? Tell us the bucket list items that you'd like to go fly.
What, in terms of aeroplanes to fly or places to visit?
Visit and fly. Let's do them both. Because
I've ticked off most of my bucket list already. I always wanted to do Oshkosh. I've done Oshkosh now on 7 or 8 occasions. The one that really ticked the box for me was Reno. I remember sitting watching television when I was about 5 or 6 years old and there being a documentary about Reno. And I said, one day I will go there. And I managed to do it about 3 years ago, got out there for the air racing. And what an experience that was. It was everything I expected and more. There are all places you want to go. I'd love to do some of the Australian collections, which hopefully I'll get a chance to do later this year. In terms of aeroplanes to fly, again, I've been very lucky with the job I've had with editing magazines and working on magazines that I've got to fly some pretty cool aeroplanes over the years. I used to work at a private flying magazine, so we would go and do features on aeroplanes, and you'd manage to jump in a spare seat whenever was possible. So I've been in everything from P-40 Warhawk to Fallen Gnats and Jet Provosts and Tiger Moths and Stearmans and Stomps and all sorts of really cool. So I tell people I don't have a job. I've got a hobby I get paid for. I'm a very lucky boy, and I'm under no illusions about that.
Well, I think it's great work that you do, and I appreciate you staying up late with us tonight. By the way, is there a way that we could follow your work? A lot of folks have been asking about that for some reason. You co-hosted with me for the Arsenal of Democracy, the big 70th anniversary of VE Day. If people
can
want to follow
that was
along
2 years
with
ago
you,
already.
I know. It's almost time to do it again. What? Where can people find you, Steve? How can they get a hold of you?
Just look me up on Facebook. I'm Stephen with a PH, Stephen Bridgewater on Facebook. Send me a request on there. And we don't do anything official, but I tend to use my Facebook page mostly for work-related items. There's the odd bit of social on there as well, but that's the easiest way to find me. Most of the work I do at the moment is for Key Publishing. That's the company that's just published the Valor in the Air book, and I'm doing various book projects with them as well. So you can find us on keypublishing.com for the books and the magazine sides of things. Well, the best way to follow me is find me at an air show, Matt. I'm normally at one every British air show that's going without fail. I'm at Duxford this coming weekend for the Duxford Air Festival. That's really exciting. Well, we've got tell you what, the French have supported Duxford this year on quite a big scale. We've actually got a Rafale coming across, which is the the latest French Air Force fighter. So, you know, sort of the French equivalent of what we call the Typhoon. And I guess F-22 would be your equivalent. Maybe the F-22 is a little bit more modern, but so we've got
maybe the F-16
warbirds, and then we've got some modern jets as well, which is really unusual.
Wonderful. Anything that that you're particularly excited about? We've got to get you over here in September, though. I think we could do a flight. We have the British collection out west. We could go see the British tiger moth, and well, actually, it's an Australian tiger moth, but okay, an A model, and then the chip. We could go fly down the coast of California. It'd be a lot of fun. Just a
doesn't that sound fun?
Yeah,
that
you would want it. I'll take the other. We'll have a good time, and then we can go to Miramar. It'd be fun. Come on,
let's make it happen.
That would be a whole lot of America right there in your camera at Miramar.
You know, we always get a warm welcome in the States. And
telling
it's,
you. Massive walls of fire at an air show. I mean, come on, Steve. They wouldn't know what to do over there with all that. We'd have a good time. It'd be a lot of fun.
We definitely would. We definitely would.
Have a Moab simulation this year, a mother of all bombs. That would be, I don't think there, that I've never seen that at an air show. You know?
No.
Did
no.
you see the? I, by the way, did
I
you see that?
CIA drop a few big bombs out of the B-29 over the years, but Moab
never,
would be impressive.
Never a Moab out of a C-130. Someone's got to pull that off. You know, I love that little picture on Facebook of that duffel bag did say that General Mattis had forgotten to write his mother of all bombs on Mother's Day, and of course she forgave him, as any good mother would. So,
absolutely.
Anyhow, we'll have to get you over for that. You got to come over and see us, and I hope you take lots of images for us to see from Duxford, because you're such a great photographer. So I hope you do that.
Again, if people send us a request on Facebook to Stephen Bridgewater, we'll put all the pictures up there. They normally go up on the Monday or the Tuesday after the event. So we're actually in the middle of a heat wave over here in the UK at the moment. We're in the heat wave as far as the UK is concerned. We're in the low 80s forecast for the weekend.
Oh,
so. We've had a reasonable run at Duxford over the years. We've had a couple of bad weather shows over the last couple of years, but it's shaping up into a great weekend. And with a good mix of aeroplanes as well, it's shaping up into probably a highlight. Flying Legends is looking good as well, Matt. We've got even got a P-51 coming across from the US for Flying Legends this year.
I love it. It's going to be fun. Good time. Yes. Well, Steve, thanks for coming on. Always good to hear your voice.
Good to talk to you, Matt. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Steve Bridgewater, everybody, from the United Kingdom there, from England. We're glad to have him on. Listen, we're going to cut it off early tonight because I just can't talk. I'm just miserable right now. But hey, stick around, because still to come tonight, a really, really cool show tonight is in store. Bevan Dews is coming up next with Dave Homewood. Bevan, one of my favorites. Young guy, flies a lot for the Peter Jackson collection. He's just an all-around great guy. So I hope you stick around, because if not, you're going to miss it. It's going to be great. Stay around. The Wings Over New Zealand show is coming up at the top of the hour. Stay with us. And you can tell I'm ill, because I just forgot to say it, what we say every night when we close the show out. If you see a veteran, be sure to tell him thank you. So long for now, everybody.